Good morning, counsel. This is the case of In Re Interest of Mecky S. And as you can see, we have 6 members of the court here personally. Justice Miller Lerman is appearing by WebEx. Justice Miller Lerman, do you want to introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Justice Miller Lerman appearing by WebEx. Thank you.
And Ms. Brundo, are you with us here today?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. And Ms. Constantakos, you are with us today.
I am.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No.
Very good. Ms. Brundo, then, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Nicole Brundo. I'm with Douglas County Attorney's Office, and I'm here today to discuss this case. We would argue, Your Honors, that this was a final appealable order, the dismissal by the judge, granting us grounds to appeal. We would argue that 43-247 subsection 8, by the plain reading of the statute, allowed us to file this pleadings as a second supplemental petition. Further, we would argue that we should have been allowed to present evidence. There is an order that indicated that on November 3rd of 2020, that the matter was set for adjudication and we were ready to proceed to adjudication on that date. However, we were not allowed to present evidence. The matter was dismissed by Judge Daniels. And we would also argue that we do have subject matter jurisdiction and res judicata does not apply because this was a different subsection that we filed than had originally been filed.
Did the juvenile court ever lose jurisdiction over these two children?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, but I would like to, with that question, note that guardianships happen in a variety of ways in Douglas County Juvenile Court. Historically, often the permanency objective would be guardianship, and the guardianship would then occur in a court different than the juvenile court.
But that doesn't happen that way anymore, does it?
Sometimes. It can still happen that way, and it does still happen that way in Douglas County. Some of them do occur in Douglas County Juvenile Court. So what we've seen with our office, we oversee and are a party to 100% of the cases in Douglas County Juvenile Court. Some of the guardianships take place after parental rights have been terminated, but a great many of them take place when the parental rights have not been terminated. And what we saw is that it's quite often, I would say almost on a weekly or biweekly basis, that our office is presented with the case scenario that parental rights remain intact, yet a guardianship has disrupted. And the guardianship, I would say half the time occurred in county court and half the time occurred in juvenile court. This particular judge kept the case open, even though there was a legal guardianship in place. And years passed, whereas some of the other judges may terminate jurisdiction.
Isn't there now a statute that says that the juvenile court will retain jurisdiction?
Your Honor, there is. But that doesn't mean that the lawyers remain engaged with the parents. And so Douglas County Attorney's Office was seeing on a regular basis that the guardianships would disrupt and the children or juveniles would be placed back into HHS custody. And there might just be review hearings, but the parents whose parental rights are still intact had no knowledge whatsoever that the guardianships had been terminated, that they had a right to come to court and to potentially present evidence whereby they've placed themselves in a position where now years later, they can parent. We have legal parties, including guardians ad litem, that are arguing that a parent cannot have their children back, even though it was years past that the guardianship began, and the parents arguably have put themselves back into position to parent. So we began as a policy to make sure that all parents, mothers and fathers, whose parental rights were still intact, had the opportunity at due process and legal representation in these matters.
Were all of those folks in this particular case at the time that this attempted second supplemental petition was to come for hearing, weren't all of those people present and engaged?
They were, Your Honor, but we would not necessarily have known that when we were making preparations to file our second supplemental petition. We were actually waiting for an affidavit from Child Protective Services and or their designated contract agency, St. Francis, to indicate and establish for us if they had reassessed the parental situation and what our type of pleading should be, whether it be a no fault on the parent based on that they were not legally responsible for the past several years, but now they need a little bit of assistance to be reunified. We did not receive that affidavit, so we went ahead and filed the 243-247 subsection 8 on our own. But again, we've been requesting when these guardianships do disrupt, and Your Honor, we've been called to district court and county court to have our office be present for the ones that were done in outside of Douglas County Juvenile Court, because the judges, they don't know what to do. And so they want someone present in the event. What do we do now when there's no docket and they don't know what to do with the children that day? So we've been very active, our office, in dealing with this guardianship issue, disruption of guardianship issue, and requesting and making referrals to the Child Protective Services hotline to reassess the situation with the parents whose rights are still intact, to make a determination of whether or not there needs to be a new filing. If it is in juvenile court, does there need to be continued juvenile court jurisdiction, or has the parent put themselves back in a position to parent? Or again, do they need, is it a no fault situation, or in this situation, subsection 8? But there are parents we have seen that over the years that the guardianship went on that have now put themselves in a position where they may want to reunify with their children, and they were not being notified that the guardianships have terminated and that their juveniles were being placed back in the temporary care and custody of Health and Human Services for an indefinite period of time, potentially until they're 19 years old. So across the board, we made it a practice to refer the case back to the hotline and ask that the situation be reassessed on behalf of these juveniles.
Brenda, we've lost your sound.
To make sure that parents had. Can you hear me now?
Your audio was sort of dropping in and out.
We can hear you now.
Okay. We made it a practice across the board in our office when we were made aware that a guardianship had disrupted to refer the matter back to the Child Protective Services hotline and request that the parental situation and the juvenile situation be reassessed to provide recommendations for our office regards to whether or not a new filing is necessary if it's a case where the guardianship occurred outside of Douglas County Juvenile Court, or whether or not continued jurisdiction and placing the juveniles back into HHS is necessary if it's a case where the guardianship did take place in Douglas County Juvenile Court. And again, in most cases, this one is unique that the parents all retained their attorneys and that they were all present. But I have personally participated in numerous cases where the guardianships had disrupted or terminated in the juvenile court or in a separate court, and the parents were not notified. They were no longer represented by counsel. There was no new protective custody hearing or hearing to establish where are we now. And we feel strongly that if those parental rights are still intact and the legal parents, again, mothers and fathers, have a right to counsel, have a right to a hearing, have a right to a new assessment to determine if they put themselves in a position that is different than years ago when the guardianship was first established. In our eyes, the original petition reached a permanency objective. And now that permanency objective has disrupted, and there should be some reset, reassessment of the family unit as a whole, considering everybody's rights, to make a determination of what's the new permanency objective, whether or not reunification can become the new goal, and what the plans are going to be from that point forward until each of those juveniles are 19 years old. And I can personally attest to on a regular basis that that was not occurring. And in this particular case, although there were lawyers representing the parents, again, I do believe that this was an appealable order, that we as a county attorney's office had a right to at least present evidence on a statute that by the plain meaning of the statute of children being in juvenile court part of the guardianship and it disrupting, we had a right to file that pleading. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Ms. Constantakos, you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, Ms. Brundle. I'm the guardian ad litem. I'm Chris Constantakos, the guardian ad litem for the minor children. I feel that a little bit of a summary of history is necessary here just to put the facts in perspective. In 2017, the state of Nebraska, through the Douglas County Attorney's Office, filed a petition regarding a neglect petition regarding 5 children and their parents. That matter was adjudicated on May 11th of 2017. 2 years later, the department came in and filed a motion for alternative permanency through the establishment of a guardianship. And on June 12th of 2019, the guardianship was ordered. What's important to keep in mind is that at the time the guardianship was ordered for the girls, Maijay and Zanaya, the case remained open regarding the siblings and the parents who continued to participate.
The guardianship was established within the juvenile court.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
In the same docket.
Under the same docket. And that's consistent with in re interest of Rebecca B, or in re interest of, or guardianship of Rebecca B. So,
and help, I apologize, I don't have my facts down very well on this. The guardianship is with another family member or with whom?
It was actually with a person the girls knew as a bus driver, school bus driver. We had developed an affiliation with them and the department arranged for that. So in the guardianship order that was entered in June of 2019, the juvenile court ordered that the guardianship be established, number one. Number two, that Health and Human Services be relieved of all responsibility for further care, custody, and control of Maijay and Zanaya, the two girls in the their teenagers in the guardianship. The third thing that the court ordered was that it retain continuing jurisdiction, and you can see from the record in this case, the court conducted regular guardianship review hearings at which all the parties were present, participated, including the county attorney. In each of the orders issued after the guardianship review hearings, the juvenile court judge made a finding that guardianship continued to be in the girl's best interest. It was 2 years later, in early September of 2020, that there was a catastrophic, what I would call catastrophic disruption of the guardianship. Both sides wanted out. The guardian had had it with the girls. The girls had had it with the guardian. The girls ran from the guardian's home without authorization, and they ran to the home of an adult cousin. At that point, I provided this information to the deputy county attorney as well as to the case manager who was still involved with the siblings on the open 3A case. I asked the county attorney to file a motion to terminate the guardianship, and they refused to do so. So I filed a motion to terminate the guardianship, and that was heard by the juvenile court on, I believe, on September 22nd. At that hearing, the county attorney participated, the parents participated, I participated, the judge heard evidence and entered an order granting the motion to terminate the guardianship. It also placed Maijay and Zanaya, the girls within the guardianship, back into the custody of HHS for appropriate care, services, and placement. And finally, the court ordered on the same date that the parents pay medical, dental, and hospital costs to the extent that their insurance would cover it. The 3A case that was originally filed in 2017 is still open today. Parents are still participating. There are regular review hearings. The court is having an opportunity to monitor their compliance. I think one of the issues this boils down to is whether or not there's a necessity to doubly adjudicate Maje and Zaniya. And I'd call the court's attention to In Re Interest of Brandon W. It's a 1996 case decided by the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I did not cite it in the brief, but in that case, it's a very convoluted opinion, but in that case, the basic fact pattern was that the state filed a neglect petition against two parents on the same date or close to that date. The father indicated that he would sign a relinquishment of parental rights to the child. He did that, but it was never accepted by the department. The case went forward, it was adjudicated, and the father never appealed the adjudication order. 2 months later, the father revoked his relinquishment of parental rights. Again, it was never accepted by the department. And immediately after that, the state came in and filed a supplemental petition. And in that petition, the sole basis for the filing of the second petition was the fact that the father had revoked his relinquishment of parental rights. From that, the father appealed the second adjudication order. Court of Appeals held that the fact that the father had revoked his relinquishment of parental rights did not negate the first adjudication of the child. So by comparison, I think what we have in this case is a situation where the disruption or termination of the guardianship does not negate the prior adjudication of Maje and Zaniya.
Now, let's suppose that in establishing the guardianship, the juvenile court had said, I'm terminating jurisdiction.
Well,
even though it wasn't supposed to do that under the
right.
statute, let's suppose that they did. Would that be an appropriate situation
yes.
for a sub 8?
Clearly. Absolutely. And I think that's why sub 8 was enacted. It was enacted 20 years ago in 2001. And if you look at the legislative history relating to the enactment of that bill, what it basically points out in the testimony before the Judiciary Committee is that that's what was happening. That was the practice. The juvenile court was establishing guardianships, then it was terminating its jurisdiction. Then if the guardianship disrupted later, what to do? There was a need to reacquire juvenile court jurisdiction to help the kids achieve their health, safety, and welfare. So I think that would be an appropriate use.
So even today, under the situation where the statute regarding establishment of guardianships dictates that courts retain jurisdiction, it's possible that they might not. And if they don't, that's the sub 8 is appropriate.
I think that's correct. I have not seen what Ms. Brundo is telling you. I don't think that juvenile court guardianships can, or guardianships through juvenile court are happening in probate court without violating In Re guardianship of Rebecca B. That case is crystal clear in saying that all guardianships of juveniles who are under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court must take place pursuant to the juvenile code, not the Nebraska probate code.
So what would happen if a guardianship had been established by the probate court before any juvenile proceedings were commenced? Would sub 8 be a possible choice there?
I believe it would not, Your Honor, because the exact wording of sub 8 requires that the juvenile was a ward of the court, whatever that means. And I think the state's petition alleges ward of the state, but that the jurisdictional requirement for the juvenile court to get involved under sub 8 is that the juvenile had to have been a ward of the court, the state, at the inception of the guardianship. And if there was a county court guardianship that was in place over a juvenile without any involvement in juvenile court, I don't think sub 8 would apply.
So the second supplemental petition that we're talking about today really contained no facts whatsoever other than the disruption of the guardianship, right?
Right. It had four components to that supplemental petition. The first one was whether Maje and Zaniya were wards of the court at the inception of the guardianship. So we had this hearing on November 3rd, which was on my motion to dismiss the second supplemental petition. And the judge took judicial notice of the fact that on May 11th, 2017, the girls were adjudicated and clearly wards of the court at the time of the guardianship. The second issue that was raised by the state's petition was whether the guardianship over Majay and Zanaya had terminated. Again, at the motion to dismiss held on November 3rd, the juvenile court took judicial notice of the fact that on September 22nd, it entered the order terminating the guardianship. The third issue raised by the second supplemental petition is that the state really prayed for no substantial relief other than the court make such orders as are appropriate. Again, at the hearing on the motion to dismiss held on November 3rd, the juvenile judge took judicial notice of the fact that he had already terminated the guardianship, placed the girls back in HHS custody under the open prior doc, the previous docket, which is still open, and that he also made an order for support. The fourth thing was whether or not support should be ordered, and he took judicial notice of the fact that on September 22nd, he had ordered support.
So when you get to the end of all of this, your position is that the order that dismissed the second supplemental petition did not substantially affect a substantial right
that,
of the state.
That is, yes. And I acknowledge the state has a substantial interest, but in order to acquire appellate jurisdiction, there's got to be more than that. It's a two-step process. There has to be, the lower court's order has to have a substantial effect on the substantial right. And I can't see that there's any prejudice in this matter, since all of the things that would have been asked for in the second, or were asked for in the second supplemental petition, were already adjudicated by the juvenile judge on September 22nd in his order terminating the guardianship. I'm out of time.
Before you
yes.
sit down, Ms. Katsantakos, I may have misunderstood Ms. Brondo's argument, but she seemed to indicate that there was a flagrant disregard in Douglas County about where guardianships should be handled. Can you comment on that?
Personal experience?
Yes.
The answer to that is no. In almost every courtroom that I've practiced in juvenile court and separate juvenile court in Douglas County, the guardianships I have been involved in happened right in the context of the juvenile court proceeding. And in fact, under the new statute, I think it's 43, is it 1312 something or other, the one that was passed by the legislature about 5 years ago.
.01.
Was it?
.01.
Oh, I missed the old one, I'm sorry. But
that's right.
Under .01, that's, they have to happen in juvenile court. And I am not aware of that. Now, again, I can't speak for what that office is observing or seeing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. A good day.
Do we have time for rebuttal?
No.
There is no time for rebuttal, so.
Your Honor, would I respectfully be able to even just 30 seconds?
Sure, I'll give you 30 seconds.
I certainly do not want to be on record about any flagrant disregard. There are, I can name cases and specifics even a couple weeks ago where a county court judge did terminate a guardianship and even didn't have the right birthday, so did it a year before, probably it should have happened. These cases go back years and years. So many of these happened when it was okay under the law for them to happen. And they are, the children then are left with no legal guardian. So we have to keep in mind that a lot of these are very old, and additionally that most cases are not like this one in that there aren't other children who are remaining on the docket who are being reviewed every 6 months. The guardianship happens, the parents' lawyers, they don't talk with them anymore, years go by, and then when they do happen, as you indicated, as they should under the statute now, and so the court then has a review hearing, there isn't, who knows if the parents are notified? Who is going to tell the parents that the guardianship has been terminated and they might want to have their children back? Who is going to reassess to determine whether or not the parents are in a fit position to have their parent back? And so while we didn't try to delay or refuse to file anything, we were waiting on Child Protective Services to do a new assessment of the parents whose parental rights were still intact. Because again, this is extremely unique. to have some of the children still on the docket that are being reviewed every 6 months and all the parties active in this case. So I thought it very important to clarify. I'm not saying there's a reckless disregard. I'm saying that on a regular basis, we have seen guardianships that have terminated, not only in juvenile court, but from the county court cases, and some of them are very old, and parents were not being afforded due process and lawyers when the children were placed back into HHS custody. So we felt that it was most prudent to ask for the new assessment of the parents, to ask for it be set for hearing, and then to have lawyers present. And we have seen remarkable participation with parents and their attorneys and appreciation for that due process.
You've exhausted your 30 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council, that concludes arguments in In re interest of Mekki. My apologies if I have mispronounced that a number of times today, and council, you are excused.